Checking in with longtime NPR host Diane Rehm. Diane Rehm stepped away from her national radio show last December after 37 years on the air. But you can still hear her on her weekly podcast called Diane Rehm On My Own. On the podcast, Diane interviews newsmakers, writers, artists, and thinkers, just like she did for almost four decades. She also continues her advocacy work for the Death with Dignity movement and other causes. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, a real treat. We get to talk with Diane Rehm about her career, her life now, and what she's thinking about. Have you always wanted to turn the tables and ask Diane Rehm a question? Here's your chance. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. You'd think that after more than three decades hosting a two-hour public radio call-in program, Diane Rehm would enjoy some quiet time away from the mic and all that preparation for interviewing the movers and shakers of the world. But that's not how Diane operates. She's moved on from her talk show and has embarked on a podcast called Diane Rehm On My Mind. She's also very active in a number of causes, including Death with Dignity. As you probably know, Diane is also an author. Her books include Finding My Voice, Toward Commitment, Life with Maxie, and most recently, On My Own. She's won numerous awards, including a Peabody Award, and was awarded a National Humanities Medal by President Obama. Diane joins us from the studios of WAMU in Washington. Diane, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And I do apologize to you and your listeners. I've gotten a very bad cold coming back from Boston, sitting on the runway for 3 hours.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, I so appreciate you being here, despite your cold. And as always, we want to hear from you and the audience. What questions do you have for Diane Rehm? We get to turn the tables today and ask her questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Diane, I'm sure that you're thinking of John McCain today, as he was on your program many times. What are your thoughts as you learn of his diagnosis?
Oh my gosh, I am so sad to hear that. A glioblastoma is not a happy diagnosis, and I just feel so sad. We got notice this morning that he's not at all sure he'll be able to return to the Senate. So our hearts go out to him, his wife, their family. Just so sad.
One thing about Senator McCain is that when he's been willing to come on your program, he's always explained his positions in a respectful way. And I'm wondering, as you think about him and sort of his generation of politicians and what's going on now, do you feel like there's less of this now? Is there a coarsening of the public discourse?
Oh, yes. And, you know, Senator McCain knew I did not agree with his position, especially on that Iraq war. And yet he came on to the program, as you say, respectfully explaining his position and even saying, Diane, I know you don't agree with me, but I appreciate your having me on so I can explain my own. So it was that kind of exchange. These days, if a Republican who has a very different perspective is invited to come on to a program, they just say no. I mean, they'll go on to Fox, they'll go on to Hannity, they'll go wherever they know there is support and agreement for their point of view, but they don't go on when someone disagrees with them. And I really appreciated the fact that Senator McCain would do exactly that.
It's interesting to me that you said he knew that you did not agree with him on Iraq. There were, in the 37 years that you did the Diane Rehm show, you did let your opinions be known on some topics. How did you decide which to say stay neutral on and which to express your opinion about?
I think that the country was so divided on the issue of whether George W. Bush should take us into Iraq after 9/11, that I felt it was important to say what I felt. And, you know, people could agree or disagree with me, and that's fine. I think I have always let it be known that I am very pro-choice. And I am pro-choice at the beginning of life, and I am pro-choice at the end of life. And I'm happy to tell you that here in the District of Columbia, the law is now in effect giving people medical aid in dying after going through a number of steps with doctors and determining that death is imminent. They can be given medication by a physician. I talked last night to both Senator Leahy from Vermont and Senator Van Hollen from Maryland, and they both said that the measure that's gone through the House will not have any problem in the Senate. So I'm really pleased about that. And I am continuing to speak out around the country about the issue of the right to die. I do believe that I, as an individual, should have a right to choose.
You became even more passionate about this issue with what happened with your husband, and you've written about this in your most recent book, On My Own, and it's now in paperback. Can you feel, Diane, when you speak, the impact of your book and your willingness to open up and tell your story?
I can indeed. And, you know, I have been in audiences 1,500, 1,000, 500. I can see their heads nodding as I speak. When I say that if you choose to have God make the decision for you, I support you 1,000%. If you choose to have every medical device known to science, I support you 1,000%. And if you choose to have medical aid in dying because you are suffering physically, emotionally, you can no longer lead the life you wish to lead, I support you 1,000%. So, as I said, I believe that choice at both the beginning of life and the end of life are so important to us as individuals, and I will fight for that right all over the country.
Let's talk about you. I can only imagine how strange it was to step away from the Diane Rehm show. 2 hours a day is really intense. I do 1 hour a day, and I know how much preparation I put into this program. So how has your life changed since December?
Well, you know, I am working part-time on this weekly podcast and part-time in the development section at WAMU. In fact, I am going to be the honorary chair of the 1961 Society here, which is the year that WAMU was founded. And those who leave something to us in their wills will become members of that 1961 Society. In addition, I am involved in a film project for The Right to Die. And that film project is going to take a fair amount of time. We hope that Netflix will be interested, or Sundance, or one of the large film groups, because it's been so long since The Right to Die in Oregon was created, a film that really is so, so powerful. But it's been a long time since then, and it's time to really push for what people feel they want. And in addition, as you perhaps know, I am engaged to marry and will marry in October.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations. I think I did read something
about that,
but I was not going to,
yes,
you know, go that direction if you didn't want to, but that's wonderful. Now,
yes,
and I know your beloved dog died. Are you going to get another dog?
Oh, my gosh. I miss Maxie so much. You know, when I walk into my condo, in my mind, I can still see that little fellow running down the hall to greet me. He was a long-haired chihuahua, all black, and he was so affectionate and loving and sweet. One problem, however, he bit people who put their hands in his face.
Oh, my.
And he had bitten some of the most important people in Washington. So I had to caution everyone who came into the condo not to put their hands in his face. He didn't like it. And he would simply nip at a finger or a hand. And it was very embarrassing, but I loved that little guy so much. Now, because I'm getting married in October, I think this is not the year to get a dog. I think I'll wait until next year.
Okay.
My fiance lives in Florida and can help to train him.
Okay. I think that sounds like a great plan. So tell me about the podcast.
Yeah.
How do you determine the topics and the guests?
Well, I've got two of my wonderful producers from the Diane Rehm Show, Sandra Baker and Rebecca Kaufman, came with me to do the podcast. And you know, in a sense, it's very much the same thing. You're looking for the topics. You're looking for the guests who are in the news. You want to bring people up to date on what's happening. That's in the first segment of the podcast. And then the second segment is a somewhat softer element. For example, the podcast that goes up tomorrow at noon and every Friday at noon is how our iPhones may help to determine and treat mental health, which is really a fascinating subject. In the first portion of the program, Manu Raju, who is one of CNN's most valued reporters, will talk to us about what's happening here in Washington, not only about Senator McCain, but about the health care bill, about President Trump's statements to the New York Times regarding Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I mean, I have never seen such a mess as we have here in Washington right now.
And you were born and raised in Washington. You know that city and its culture inside out.
Well, this was a small, sleepy town when I was growing up, and I could walk anywhere. I walked to elementary school. I walked to junior high. I walked to high school. You know, it was just a small town with movie theaters we could walk to. My mother and I used to walk to church when she would want to go in the evenings to services. It was a small town until probably the Kennedys came to town, and all of a sudden things got bigger and bigger and more complicated.
Back to your podcast. How has it been to do an interview show without the callers, without your audience being able to engage, because your podcast is recorded ahead of time, correct?
It is, but there are subjects that we sometimes ask people to call in about ahead of time. And then we can record those telephone calls and insert them into the podcast. But you're absolutely right. I do miss talking to people every day, as I did during that 37 years of doing the Diane Rehm Show. I love staying connected with the folks who are listening, which is why I keep traveling. When I am invited to speak in places around the country, I go, because I love meeting the people and hearing their thoughts about what's happening in the world, about their own situations in their own communities. I love staying connected in that way.
We are talking with none other than Diane Rehm. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. This is Maine Calling. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Mount Desert Island Ice Cream, artisanal, handcrafted ice cream with locations in Bar Harbor and Portland. And Wayne Fleet, the kind of school that thinks good questions are at least as important as right answers. Learn more at waynefleet.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with Maggie Haberman of the New York Times, one of the reporters Donald Trump loves to hate.
I think that he loves the press. I think he lives at least loosely by the theory that if not all press is good press, that most press is good press.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. The Maine International Film Festival is now underway, with over 100 films being shown in Waterville. The festival runs through this coming Sunday, the 23rd. Maine Public Radio is a media sponsor, and Maine Public members receive a special discount. Visit mainepublic.org for a link to the film schedule and for details about that member discount.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Diane Rehm. She is on the line with us from WAMU in Washington. You remember her from her 37 years hosting the Diane Rehm Show. Since she retired, and I'm putting that in quotes, at the end of last year, she has been keeping busy with her podcast and her work for a number of charitable causes. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go first to Bangor and Larry. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. Oh, shoot. Larry, are you there?
Sounds as though
we lost him. Diane, then I'll go to an email from Beth. An excellent question. She asks, how does one keep positive when so much deceit and manipulation is happening in today's political scene?
I think that is really a good question. You know, during the break, you had an underwriting spot for, I think it's Wayne Fleet School. And the comment was, asking questions is as important as getting the right answer. And from this administration, it's very difficult to get any answers. It is as though they think answering a question straightforwardly does not serve them well. And so they keep sort of wandering. And I'm talking about the president himself. When asked a question at his only public press conference since he became president, he doesn't answer questions. And those he likes, he simply sloughs off or says, we'll go to another question. And even when John Dickerson of Face the Nation was there in the Oval Office and said, Mr. President, I have another question for you, he said, interview is over. That's all there is to it. So getting our senior officials to answer questions and do them, answer them straightforwardly, is something I am missing more and more, and something for which John McCain was really, really good at, which gives us even more pause to think about that man now suffering from a glioblastoma of the brain.
We'll go to Trish, who's calling from Harpswell. Hi, Trish. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm such an admirer of Diane Rehm, and we miss her. I live in Washington, D.C. most of the year. And my question is, we are following the show that replaced yours, 1A, and I was curious about what Diane feels the direction of the show has taken, and also I wanted to applaud her in her right to die. It's a huge issue for a lot of families, and good work. Thank you. I'll take my answer off.
Before,
the air.
Well, hold on. Okay, don't
no,
hang up.
Okay.
Okay. Are you still on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Here's what I want to know. What do you think of the direction 1A is taking? It's far more important for us to know what you as listeners think rather than for you to know what I as a broadcaster think.
And also, I'm going to interject and say listeners of Maine Public Radio may not know what we're talking about. We do not air 1A on Maine Public Radio. It's a national program.
Okay.
People here can podcast it, but Trish, you listen to it when you live in, when you're in Washington, correct?
Correct. That's correct. I enjoy the show. It's probably part of the times. It's so politically driven, and given our current administration, that's understandable. I miss Diane's connection with her audience and with the people that she's interviewing. I think that'll come with time. It's a younger host, but I do enjoy it, but we do miss Diane.
You're very kind, and I fully agree with you. I think that connection with the audience will come. I think Joshua is a very, very bright young man. He's always on target with his questions. I think as he learns the process of listening and listening and listening, he'll learn to listen better. And will change the program.
Yes, I totally agree. He's an interesting interviewer and has a great insight.
Trish.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for calling in today. We have Larry back, so we're going to go to him. Larry, go ahead. Are you there this time?
I'm there this time. I dropped my phone. I apologize. I have two things, I guess, now. One's on Senator McCain, and the other's on the right to die. I'm over 70, and I just saw my heart surgeon last week. And all I can say to him is, yes, I know I'm going to die. One of the days will be my turn, but please make sure I don't have have a stroke. And I very much would like to have the right to die in the state of Maine. My second thing is Senator McCain. As a man with whom I profoundly disagree about the function of government, but as a former serviceman, having gone through all the training you go through about what happens if you're a prisoner of war, and then to have our president disparage him by saying he's not an honorable man, I can't imagine a more honorable man than Senator McCain, no matter how much I disagree with him.
Larry, I totally agree with you. Frankly, during the campaign, I thought that might finish Donald Trump for saying that about John McCain. I thought it was not only disrespectful, it was outrageous, considering exactly as you say that John McCain served 6 years in a prison in the most deprived circumstances and then refused to leave without his comrades. I mean, for Donald Trump, who never served a day in his life, to say that struck me as horrendous. As to the right to die, Larry, if you believe in it, you should work for it. You can get in touch with organizations that are promoting the right to die. You can start with Compassion and Choices. You can write to your member of Congress. There are all kinds of things you personally can do to be active in the movement.
Larry, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Richard, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Richard. You're on the line with Diane Rehm.
Yes. Thank you, Jennifer. Diane, this is almost the most honorable portion of my life to be able to talk with you. I wish you well in your cold and in your obviously not a retirement. My question to you would be, and of course I agree with what Larry just said and what your replies were about that. When it comes to partisanship over politics, over principles, who's driving the bus, so to speak? Would legislators have a different stance if it weren't for the people, the electorate back home, pushing them to vote the way they do?
Well, I think you have to acknowledge that 40 million people voted for Donald Trump because they believed in what he was saying. They believed that he would bring better jobs. They believed that he would bring better health insurance. They believed that life would be better if he were president. Now, in all fairness, he's only had 6 months in office. But on the other hand, he's got both houses of Congress. He's got a majority on the Supreme Court. So one wonders whether that 40 million of the electorate and the portion of that 40 million who continue to support him no matter what he does are still believers or simply comfortable with their vote and not likely to change their thinking. Donald Trump is a really good salesman, and that's what he did during the election. He sold the American people on his bill of goods. Now he has 3.5 years to see if he can make good.
Richard, thank you for your call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. And we do have a tweet from Isabel. It is so wonderful to hear Diane Rehm's voice on the air in Maine. Thank you for hosting her. You're welcome, Isabel. It's our pleasure.
Thank you, Isabel.
And we'll go to Ann calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank Diane Rehm, not the least, for paving the way for people like Jennifer Rook. So thank you both very much. And what I want to...
That's lovely.
Yes.
You are wonderful, both of you, rock stars. So what I want to ask is, as soon as Donald Trump got the nomination, I was running around like a lunatic saying, if all we can do is make fun of this guy, he's laughing his way to the White House. And I even said this on the Diane Rehm show twice. The first time I was laughed off by the pundits. The second time they were like, oh yeah, this is what people are saying. So I'm wondering how so many smart people got it so wrong. And do you see the Clintons loosening their death grip on the Democratic Party and finally letting other people come up through the ranks?
Well, as to your second question regarding the Clintons, I think they will continue to be active in politics. They will continue to speak out. They will continue to talk about issues that are important to the Democratic Party, the people who believe in the kinds of things that they have brought forward. I don't think that they have a grip on what the Democratic Party will be going forward. I think there are other people who will be active, who will be respected, who will bring forth new ideas. Now, how the pundits got it so wrong is a great question. Everybody, I agree with you, everybody sort of laughed at Donald Trump, except the 40 million people who bought into the idea that Donald Trump could change their lives, could make their lives better. They believed that. Now, he still has 3.5 years to make good on the promises he's made. And with control of both the House, the Senate, and the White House, he should be able to. But there are enough people who simply do not buy into his sort of flattening the earth in a way, throwing out everything, including the health care bill. And we've just learned from the Congressional Budget Office that some 32 million people would be left without insurance if they went ahead and simply dumped what is called Obamacare. So we shall see. I don't know how so many people got it wrong, but they clearly got it wrong because of the believers.
Anne, thanks so much for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're speaking with Diane Rehm. We do need to take another break. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy. Nonprofitmaine.org.
Come, let's hear some of your adventures. I could tell you my adventures beginning from this morning, said Alice a little timidly, but it's no use going back to yesterday because I was a different person then.
Alice in Wonderland. This week on Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
Join us for Selected Shorts coming up this Sunday evening at 8 o'clock. And coming up in about 20 minutes in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, World Affairs welcomes Graham Allison, director of Harvard's Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs. They'll be discussing the relationship between China and the USA. Again, that's coming up at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we have Diane Rehm with us. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Diane, I want to get back to the phones in just a minute. But first, I want to ask you, you know, poll after poll show that the people, American people, want Congress to work together in a bipartisan way. We hear this over and over again. And I'm wondering what you believe is the biggest obstacle to that, because you have had, you know, you've thought about this and talked about this with the biggest thinkers there are. Is it the money in politics? Is it the gerrymandering? Is it something else? What is in the way of bipartisanship?
Well, certainly all the things you mentioned, but at its base, the difference is a philosophy. A philosophy of how to govern, a philosophy of what to provide for people, a philosophy of taxation, a philosophy of providing free schools, a philosophy of clean air. I mean, those are at the basis of the kinds of things that separate Democrats and Republicans. I think when President Trump declared he was pulling out of the Paris Agreement, I mean, there was an uproar in a part of the Congress, a part of the Congress that believes the United States should live up to its treaty obligations. Now, when Donald Trump visited France and spoke with President Macron, it sounded as though he was implying that there may be some opening to moving back in. But I mean, issues like the environment, issues like global warming, that huge ice cap breaking off the other day, people not finishing schools, people instead establishing other kinds of private schools where children have to pay, or charter schools where the government is less involved. I grew up going through the best public education system there was here in Washington. I am so dismayed to see what's happening to our school systems today. So at base, Jennifer, it's a separation of ideas and ideals. And I think in this climate, it's going to be very hard to get Democrats and Republicans to work together.
We'll go to Jean, who's calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for answering my call. And Diane, I'm so pleased to hear about your life since your retirement. and would like to hear more about your fiancé and your upcoming marriage in October.
Oh, you're very dear. Well, it was an extraordinary coincidence. I met this man briefly 29 years ago, and as a matter of fact, we met very briefly. I think we barely spoke, but we were both invited to the same wedding. And as the bride was coming down the aisle on the arm of her father, someone took a photograph of my now fiancé in the pew directly in front of me. So you can see the bride, you can see her father, you can see John, and you can see me. So fast forward 29 years. His wife died 5 years ago. My husband died 3 years ago. He sent me a letter after my book On My Own came out. He said, "You may not remember me. We were introduced, blah, blah, blah. And if you are ever in Florida, where John lives," he said, "I'd love to take you for a cup of coffee." And I really liked that sound of that letter. John is a retired, ordained Lutheran minister. He is a pastoral counselor. He works in hospice. He works at the West Palm Beach Hospital as a hospice counselor and conducts weekly hospice survivor groups. And so he said, "If you're ever in Florida, I'd love to see you." So I didn't even open my mail for 3 weeks. I was on so much of a book tour. When I read his letter, I wrote him back and said, "How nice to hear from you. As a matter of fact, I will be in Florida. I'll be in Orlando next month." Well, he drove 3.5 hours.
Oh.
There were 1,500 people in the audience, 500 of whom had paid extra for their tickets to have a photograph with me and a signed book. And here he came, introduced himself, and I said, "Oh, how lovely to see you." And here's what happened. As he walked away, he turned around and looked at me, and I turned around and looked at him, and something happened. Something happened. So he wrote me after he got home and said he'd love to get to know me better. Could he come to Washington? And I told him about hotels nearby. And he did indeed come to Washington. And then I went down to Florida to visit. And that was a little more than a year ago. And he is a wonderful man, genuine, sympathetic, kind, and caring. And we will be married in October.
Oh, exciting. Are you going to be married in Washington or in Florida?
No, we're going to be married in Washington at the National Cathedral.
Oh, great. Oh, Jean, thanks for asking. We'll move on now. We'll go to Clifton and Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. It's not me and John. Sounds like a Bogey McCall movie there, your romance. As you may know, GE is saying that 50% of their workforce are millennials right now, not in the future. And so my question to Diane and to Jennifer, which I think Jennifer's a rock star too, is that How do you see those folks participating, or will they participate more in the political process to change the political process? I've heard a lot about it, but I think we have a lot of older people who are pontificating about it, but we don't see a lot of millennials or Gen X is really, in some form that says, you know, this is how we see the political landscape. We do believe that government can help. 48 years ago, we put a man on the moon, and it was a government that put us on the moon. So I'm just curious what Diane and Jennifer thought of that.
Sure. Well, Diane, what do you think? Will millennials change this country?
Well, I think you may find that more and more millennials get involved as they find work for themselves, as they find the need to involve themselves politically because they want the country to get better, to get stronger. They don't want to see the country go to war again. They don't want to see themselves living in near poverty or living on their parents' income. At the same time, I fear that so many millennials have simply been turned off, that they see what's happening in Washington and want to wash their hands of it because they think it's such an awful place of argument, the kinds of negativity that have taken our government to a place where practically nothing gets done. So I think it will depend on our schools to ensure that the next generation of young people really, really get involved. I'm worried about the millennials because I think they're so turned off now, but there's always the future.
Steve, thank you for your question. We have from Pat an email. I want to disagree with Diane. I don't think all who voted for Donald Trump did so because they believed in him. I think many voted for him because they didn't want to vote for Hillary, and that is very unfortunate.
Well, if indeed that is the case, and your emailer could be exactly right, I think there were a lot of people who voted against Hillary, but I do believe they bought into the promises that Donald Trump made rather than the sort of rational, objective kind of reality that Hillary Clinton was bringing to the table. They didn't like the message. They didn't like her. Maybe there was some gender hatred there. Maybe the country wasn't ready yet for a female president. Or maybe it was just her personality. I do not think she ran a good campaign. I do not think she did the best that she could have done. But at the same time, I do believe she had some really sound ideas and sound thoughts for what the country's direction should be. If they voted against someone rather than for someone. I think that happens probably in every election, but in this one in particular, I do think Donald Trump sold people a bill of goods.
We'll go to Dick calling from Bridgeton. Hi, Dick. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling with Diane Rehm.
Hello to both of you. Diane, do you think President Trump is narcissistic? And if so, does that worry you?
Well, I'm not a psychiatrist. I am not a physician, though my daughter and son-in-law are. I do think there's a lack of empathy that I have been able to witness not only in his behaviors, but in his ordinary replies to the people with whom he deals. Saying yesterday, for example, that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, should not have recused himself from the Russian investigation, and that if he had known he was going to do that, Trump would never have appointed him. I mean, that to me says he does not understand that government officials, unlike in a corporation, they do not work for him. They work for the American people. And in that sense, I would say, yes, I agree with you. He does seem narcissistic. He does not understand how government is by the people and for the people.
Thank you, Dick. I think we have time to squeeze in one quick call. So, Constantino in Westbrook, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I just wanted to say that I'm a 30-plus year listener of the Diane Rehm Show and fully understood when she decided to retire. And I just wanted to say that I miss her like an old friend.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, you know, I really haven't retired with the weekly podcast, with everything else I'm doing. Retirement is not a word I have ever considered for myself. I want to stay involved as long as I am physically and mentally able, and staying involved is what keeps me sharp, talking with people like Jennifer. Jennifer, you're a wonderful host.
Oh, thank you.
And talking with all your listeners, that's what keeps me going.
Well, Constantino, thank you for your call. And Diane Rehm, thank you so much for joining us again on Maine Calling. Diane Rehm's podcast, her weekly podcast that comes out Friday at noon, is called Diane Rehm On My Mind. And if you haven't tried podcasting yet, maybe this is your opportunity to do so. Diane's also the author of several books, has a Peabody Award, a National Humanities Medal. I could go on, but I would run out of time. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.